All right, I'm glad to be back for another episode of the Bakari Souls Podcast. Today, I have a brother of mine, somebody I go all the way back to playing Tiger Woods golf with at Morehouse College on the PlayStation a long, long time ago, but who is now a bigwig at the United Negro College Fund, or as we affectionately call it, the UNCF. And he's been on the show before, but my brother, Rodriguez Murray, how are you?
Doing good, Bakari. Tell me, how's everything going for you?
Man, I am more blessed than I deserve. How was homecoming? It's apparent you made it back to work, so.
I didn't go. And so I didn't get a chance to make it down there, which was a big deal because this was the 20-year frat line cross thing. And so don't get it started. I don't want my line brothers to see this interview and start calling me because I broke any new ground on your show that I haven't told them. So don't get into it.
Oh, I know. I'm gonna have to talk to my brother Monty Bell about that because he was going down, and we will get to the bottom of that on another episode of how Rodriguez Murray, of all people, could miss his 20-year
reunion. Wait a minute. I did give Monty. Monty was one of two people that got a before homecoming phone call. So I'm good with Monty. You gotta bring somebody else.
I got you. You've been on the show before, so I won't have you walk us through the arc of your career. I will tell people that this is the king of Augusta, Georgia. Outside of that, talk to us about what's been happening with the United Negro College Fund over the past year since we've last talked. And for people who may not understand what UNCF does or is, what do you do primarily? And what are some of the big ticket items that you've been working on for the UNCF?
Sure. So UNCF is the nation's premier scholarship kind of conglomerate for minorities. So we're the number one private provider of scholarships to minorities, and we're only the second private provider of scholarships across the country, period. So we award $100 million in scholarships to 10,000 students at 1,100 different colleges and universities. And so we impact a lot of lives. And I'm a former UNCF scholar, so I sing his praises. I've gone from a UNCF scholar to executive at the organization. Turn good, I hope. In addition to that, we represent the interest of HBCUs, particularly private ones like our alma mater, Morehouse. And I think we do a pretty good job at it. We do the government affairs stuff for the institutions, but we also do a whole number of other shared services for the institutions. One of the big things we've been working on, we went from being really optimistic about the president's debt relief plan, impacting it. We're the people that convinced them to do double the debt relief for Pell eligible students, for the students that come from the lower socioeconomic backgrounds. We convinced them of that. We went from being optimistic about that to being disappointed from Supreme Court rulings about debt relief, about affirmative action, to taking action. And now one of the really big things we're working on is the fact that so many HBCUs, over half of them, have been threatened with bomb threats or other threats, ranging from bomb threats, ranging from threats about if the students go and vote or if polling places on the campus, and going all the way to the shootings in Jacksonville, Florida, where the shooter, the gunman, started out on Edward Waters University campus. And so now the big deal is trying to get the money to beef up the security on HBCU campuses so that we meet the moment and stop having to read about these events. Yeah. That if one more thing, if one more line wasn't crossed, then it could have been a catastrophe on one of our 100 plus HBCU campuses. And so we're trying to prevent it before it actually happens.
Is that a resources question, or is that a question about, because I mean, not all, but some campus security and chiefs are in their later years, they've already served, or they just stumbled across the opportunity. Some are not qualified as law enforcement. Talk to me about what are some of the things you're doing in place to prevent that? Because right now we're seeing the same thing happen throughout the South, that Black churches trying to be more proactive than have to have another Mother Emanuel.
So it's a resource issue. And that means, well, let me back up, because it's not just resources. The FBI could have been doing a better job about this, meaning that if it's true that a majority of the first or second wave of threats came from juveniles, the fact that there wasn't a more public way of disciplining the youngsters so that others, copycats, could be deterred, has allowed these threats to continue and has allowed you know, in the last couple weeks, a couple of guys tried to drive onto Tougaloo's campus with loaded 9mm. And if they had not been stopped by campus police at the front gate checkpoint, who knows what would have happened? And so these kinds of incidences continue to roll on. I'm convinced that national law enforcement could do better. But I'm also convinced that the federal government, if they can't get the law enforcement piece together, then they need to provide the resources to increase security, create plans on the campus, get physical barriers, and to hire more security guards. Edward Waters, a relatively small university, had 4 full-time guards in the day that the issue happened. And one of those guards is nothing short of a hero for helping to stop the issue. So Tougaloo is a campus that's not huge, and they don't have a large police force. But if their police at the front gate had not joined in and made sure that they checked the individuals that were trying to come on 2 weeks ago, it could be a very different outcome. And so we need those resources from the federal government. We pinpointed where they need to come from. It's in the Department of Homeland Security. It's in a FEMA program. It's the Nonprofit Grant Securities Program. And it's a successful program that's well funded, because that program is the same program that the synagogues use to get their money to make sure that they're strong, and other entities like high schools make sure that their entities are strong. So we figure we need to be in the same game. And because HBCUs are getting the contemporary threats of the day, we need to get the money.
That's true. A lot of press has been about public HBCUs and funding lately. But can you talk about some of the unique challenges our private HBCUs, and what kind of policy solutions are there to help address the issues our private institutions face? I was just on a panel at the HBCU, the White House HBCU Initiative, I think. And I had the president from Bowie State, who's amazing, the president from Paul Quinn, who's amazing.
Yeah.
And the president from Hampton. And of course, the president from South Carolina State. And the president from Hampton always articulating some of the unique challenges those private institutions have. Can you go into that a little bit for me?
So private institutions and public institutions, once you get to the collegiate level, it doesn't mean the same thing it meant at the high school level. What it means is that public institutions get money from their state and private institutions don't. And the public institutions, along with getting the money from their state, they get all the strings attached from the state, with the governor and state legislators being all in their business and about who's leading the schools. Yep. In addition to that, private institutions have a lot of challenges that publics don't have. And so the publics are pretty much anchored by the full faith and credit of their state. Privates have to get it how they live. They have to make it on their own. And that means that when they borrow from banks, banks often make them leverage a whole lot of the campus, just to get the same terms and conditions that publics and non-HBCUs get. And then infrastructure is really the big deal. Like, you know, the state's not spending the money to build the buildings on your campus like they do at public institutions. They're not building those same labs. You have to do all of that through private giving or finding better loan rates. And so private institutions really catch it, trying to keep up technologically, trying to keep up infrastructure-wise, and trying to make it so that the campus is palatable and attractive to students while also running a good enterprise, while also creating labs that will bring in a whole lot of resources in the future. And so it's pretty rough for private institutions, but they also tend to have generally really good reputations, like Morehouse, private institution, Spelman, private institution, Xavier down in New Orleans, Dillard, both. Private institutions. So they have really good reputations for all the things they've done in the past, but they're catching it in terms of the lack of resources. And then publics are making up for lost time in terms of what the states haven't done for them.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes has arrived in IMAX.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too.
I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA, I make calls, I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local, wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
Let me ask you this. Talk to me about the current FY24 federal budget. What's in it for private HBCUs that UNCF represents? And generally, what has been the experience with the US UNCF on a larger question of working with the Biden administration?
So we don't really know what's in the appropriations bills, and that's still rough for us. We know kind of what was in the Senate bills, some of them. We don't really know what was in the House bills. Some of the House bills were so bad that they've never been made public yet because they had so many cuts. And members have had to go home lately so much that they don't want their members to catch it. And so we don't know what was in the big bill that funds education and health and human resources, the healthcare stuff. We don't know what was in that bill yet. And it's the 1st of November. And so that's hard for because it's hard to impact what you don't know. What we want to be in there, we want more money for publics and privates for our core program, our Title III Strength in the HBCUs program. We want more money to going towards doubling the Pell Grant to help poorer students achieve higher education with less debt. We want to make sure that infrastructure needs on campuses are being met, and we want to make sure that all HBCUs are protected from all these bomb and other kinds of threats. And we want to get that FEMA money to our campuses, and we want to get it directly to our campuses, not having to go through state red tape, not having to go through an application process, because our schools have not had to apply to be terrorized, so they shouldn't have to apply for the Fed's money.
I'm going to ask you a simple question. It's probably a complicated answer. We hear every HBCU president, not every, that's a generalization, but 90% of them articulate that the number one problem they have is infrastructure / deferred maintenance on campus. Yet we hear that HBCU enrollment across the country is growing. How do you reconcile the two of those things, and what needs to be done to, quote unquote, stand in the gap?
So the current success of HBCUs is a snapshot. But when you pull the picture back and see a panoramic, you see decades where state funding was low. You see decades and decades where federal funding has not met the mark. And, you know, we talk about enrollment, but that's just the money for today and right now. You have to look back at the past and look at the lack of resources that have come to HBCUs, even while they were doing a tremendous amount of output to help build the Black middle class. And so it's those decades of being under-resourced that are still part of the current problem. If the money's coming in today and there's still debts from yesteryear, that doesn't always reconcile. So the enrollment can be up, the outlook for HBCUs can be up, but there still is a need for you to go back and actually apply the funding that you should have 30, 40, or 50 years ago to make our present and our future whole. And that's not just a federal government thing. That's not just a state thing. That's also a philanthropic thing. You know, for philanthropic leaders to make sure that they are giving a strong look and an equal look at HBCUs as that they would give a predominantly white institution is huge. You know, we can't have two classes of giving. And we've had some philanthropists working with our president and CEO, Dr. Michael Lomax, that really stepped up to the plate. Those that founded Netflix, for instance, done huge things, and there are others. But we have to make sure that it's not just looking at feds, not just looking at states, but also philanthropy. But all three entities have to come together to make sure that these institutions get the funding that they need and deserve because of the output and the product that we put out.
Shout out to Dr. Michael Lomax.
That's your homie, I know.
Huh?
I said, that's your homie, I know.
That's my guy. I mean, he's my favorite person over at the UNCF. So look, I had a question that's been in my craw a little bit. You know, my dad was a president of a member institution of UNCF at Voorhees College. I wonder, where's the next generation of UNCF college presidents coming from? You have Dr. Rosalind Artis, who I would argue is one of the best HBCU presidents we have going. I don't know how long she'll be at Benedict, but we're thanking God she's there every day. You have Dr. Warmack, who is, I thought the worst job in all of America was going to Claflin University after Henry Tisdale because of how great a president he was. Like, where are we? Is UNCF, is there an intentional effort to cultivate and train the next generation of HBCU leadership, both at the presidential and C-suite level, but also future board members? I mean, is Rodriguez Murray going to be president of Voorhees College one day?
Thanks a lot, Ricard. Yeah, so first, there's a lot of work going in to create the next generation of HBCU leaders, next generation of higher education Black leaders. You look at the current kind of new crop of HBCU leaders, they're doing their own thing. And so there's something called HELF. It's a higher education leadership program that young Black HBCU presidents are putting on themselves. And so they have a curriculum. You can apply to be a part of it, and you can go through classes, and it'll help prepare you for the next generation. In addition, the former president of Bennett College in Greensboro, North Carolina, Dr. Phyllis Dawkins, is leading a similar effort on Clark Atlanta University's campus under George French. He's the president there. And they're taking future HBCU presidents and future HBCU leaders through a curriculum. UNCF is supportive of both. I have no idea what's going to happen to me, and Voorhees hadn't come calling yet. But I do want to say that the institutions are in good hands, because there's a crop of hungry leaders. Some of them went to HBCUs, but not all of them. And so you talked about Dr. Rosalind Clark Artis. You talked about Dr. Warmack. You also have to look at Herman Felton down at Wiley College. He's on his second HBCU presidency. You have to look at the president of Virginia Union University, Dr. Lucas. You have to look all across the board. And they have to get to more women, because the women really are changing
Virginia
the game.
Virginia State has a dope president too. Shout out to Virginia State's president up there as well. Yeah. Virginia State has an amazing president. I know this isn't your wheelhouse per se, but it made news, so I have to ask the question. I want to talk about the letters that the president sent to these governors, primarily of southern states, about HBCU land grant funding and states not matching the money sent from Washington. It explain to our listeners what that means in very generic terms, please.
So what that was a good housekeeping seal of approval from the president of the United States and his secretaries, saying to the states where HBCUs are located, where they have land grants, that you've done something for the white land grant institutions in your state. By federal law, you were required to do the same thing for the Black land grant institutions in your state. You haven't done it, and we've done the calculations for the last 30 or 40 years. And then they made the letters public, which kind of was really the game changer. Sending them was big, but then making the public was a really big deal. And so for the president, the secretaries to do that was a real game changer, because it makes those state leaders, not just governors, but the legislators, think like the appropriations chair in all of those states, look at what they should have been doing, what they've been underfunding HBCUs, and how they can change that. And the fact that now the public knows it. So it's not like some swept under the rug secret in your state capital anymore. It's national news. And I think it was like one of the biggest deal things I've seen the Biden administration do in higher education period, not just in HBCUs, but in higher education period, and for equity. One of the biggest things they've done for equity that no one could take away or strike down.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA, I make calls, I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it, you can work out in it, you can go outside, you can go shopping down in your local wherever. and you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Speaking of the Biden administration, you know, it's an election coming up in 2024. Joe were to call you today and say, you know, what should the next 4 years look like from your perch? I'm not talking about foreign policy or how to, you know, raise the GDP, but what do you say to him about what he can do better, different, the same in your space and worldview?
So if you want to impact the Black middle class, if you want to impact students of color that are coming from like the lowest socioeconomic rungs, you have to invest in HBCUs and you have to put the money where the students can actually touch it. And so that means actually doing it in a way where you're not applying for it. So you have to make it so that certain triggers actually go off if you are from a certain socioeconomic class and you want to go to college. So the Pell Grants got to go up. SEOG got to go up. And you got to make it so that it hits the students and the students aren't having to work hard for it. In addition to that, you have to do the investment on HBCU campuses because HBCUs do a better job of those types of students. And so if you compare what Morehouse or any other HBCU does with a Black student coming from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and you compare that to what a PWI is doing with that same student, HBCUs with fewer resources have a better chance of making that student successful than an institution with a high endowment in every resource you can name. And so if that's the case with no resources, imagine what if you really funded those institutions the way you should. And so you've got to put the money
Talk about this too. You mentioned the money and resources, mm-hmm. but talk to me about duplicative programs.
When you say duplicative programs, say more.
Programs that the state has put at these predominantly white institutions, which draw away resources, et cetera, marine biology or whatever it may be, from students that otherwise would be able to attend HBCUs. It's been a claim that's been filed in some of these lawsuits throughout the country.
And it was one of the reasons why the Maryland lawsuit was so successful, because the state of Maryland on purpose did that. States need to stop playing with these schools like that. If you're going to do it at the HBCU campus, that's also a public institution, you've got to let students, no matter what their background or their color, if they want to be in that program, they have to come to that HBCU. Stop duplicating them and putting more resources at the non-HBCU version across the state. You have to stop it. The federal judges in Maryland, they've already ruled in favor of the HBCUs on that. And states across the country have to learn from Maryland that that's not the way to go. And if you do it, you're going to lose. So they just need to stop it and let the HBCUs thrive in the programs that the states are assigning to them.
Last question. Tell folks what you do in a daily faces. And before I let you go, talk about the ups and downs of Rodriguez Murray's day on the front lines fighting for our HBCU, something we all love, but I'm not sure we know the work that goes into it.
Absolutely. So the daily basis looks like you wake up, you digest a whole bunch of information in the morning, and then you got to go out and do these meetings. And so you have to explain to people who really agree with you on one end of the spectrum, like Sanford Bishop. And then you have to explain it to people who couldn't care less about an HBCU, even if they have one in their district. And you have to convince them their resources belong at those institutions. You field a bunch of calls from your father's colleagues, presidents of HBCUs, that all they understand is that they need more resources, and you have to go out and get them for them. HBCU presidents are pretty demanding. And members of Congress in their offices are pretty demanding. And then you've got your boss, you got Dr. Lomax, you got the board of directors. It's all pretty demanding. And so issues are changing every day. You have to stay on top of them, and you have to field all of these requests. But it's terribly gratifying, but it's not the easiest job in the world. And so the thing that people go home to every October and early November and enjoy, if you have to make that thing thrive every day, and this is something that the presidents and administrators of the institutions, they go through, and we do too at UNCF. When you have to make that thing that everybody looks forward to for 1 week a year, when you have to make it thrive and you have to make it better for them when they come back next year, it's pretty hard. And then now the way the bills are going, you only get one bite at the apple. So if you're not in the FY24 appropriations bill, if you miss that ship, then you've missed it for the year, because they're not going to move those bills again until this time next year. So you have to fight hard to make sure that you're in there. And this, it's not easy. Knowing it's a zero-sum game, it's not easy.
How can people follow UNCF, the good work on social media, everything else, find out what y'all are doing?
Yeah, it's at UNCF everything. I encourage people to also go to our website, www.uncf.org. Put your email in and get on the listserv so we can tell you not just about the work that I'm doing in my department, but then you can also know about all those 400 different scholarship programs that we fund a year, because everybody needs money to go to college. Everybody knows somebody who had to take out a student loan. It's time to make sure students aren't taking those loans out and they actually apply and get scholarships. The money is out here. We just have to make sure it gets to the students that need it the most. And so we want everybody applying to all of our scholarships.
None other than Augusta's finest. No, he didn't go to Josie Elaney. In fact, they wouldn't let him in. But that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother story. Rodriguez Murray, I love you, brother. Thank you for joining the Bakari Sellers podcast.
Love you too, man. Take care. Okay.